welcome to Indigenized Connections on Air, a podcast brought to you by the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Community Vitality in the area of leadership and civic engagement, and also by the Minnesota Indigenous Leadership Network, which explores the issues that impact tribal communities and leadership throughout Minnesota. I'm your host, Jason Schlender, and I'm the American Indian Leadership and Civic Engagement Educator. My guest today is from the Fond du Lac Band of Ojibwe. Please welcome Sarah Agaton House to the podcast.
Oh, well, Mabuju, Sarah Agaton House, Ndijna Kaja Gnashimo, Naokwe Kijikwe Ndago, Megazine Ndudim, Pashka Mittagung and Dunjaba, Goba Iganing Da, Hartberry and Dananoki. So, Miigwech for having me here. My English name is Sarah Agaton House, and I am Eagle Clan. I'm from Fond du Lac, and I live in the village of Sawyer. And I work, I work for Hartberry. I'm the CEO of Hartberry. I should stop saying I work for Hartberry because I guess it works for me.
You're so humble. You're so humble.
It makes it sound like someone else is in charge. And maybe I like to think that. But I am the CEO of Hartberry, which is an Ojibwe lifestyle brand. And I also am a organizer and runner with QuayPAC, which is an Indigenous women's running and wellness group. And how did I get started? I started as an artist, just doing one-off work. So custom like beadwork moccasins. Like I was that girl walking around with the cardboard, selling earrings out of baggies, making regalia for people. And it really grew really quickly out beyond what I could handle. And I just realized that what our community really wanted was really to not only to represent our art and see our art everywhere, but also to be able to create that themselves. And so I've just worked over the last, in the last 7 to 10 years on really like teaching and building those tools. But then in the last 7 years on creating design that represents our art and our stories as Ojibwe people in just everyday, everything you have around you every day, from blankets, earrings, clothing. And also now do a lot of custom art and murals and public art. So yeah, it's great. And so it's grown dramatically in the last 7 years from me selling my earrings to running a business with employees. It's great. So I guess, yeah, does that answer your question?
So you initially started out as the House of Hawis, right? How did that all begin?
Well, I was a stay-at-home mom for 9 years. And so when people would always ask me, like, what are you doing with yourself? And I think it's such a weird, really strange question to ask someone who's raising their children what they're doing with their time. Like, I'm just trying to like raise these kind, caring, responsible people. And also I'd always say, well, I work at House of House, because I always joke around that my kids were like these two little dictators and they would just boss me around and I just worked for them. And so I work at House of House. So then when I started selling my art, I just kind of kept that strain in my work. And then I rebranded, now it'd be about 2 years ago. Well, COVID is like a weird year. So like maybe it was three now, because it feels like two. Because what started at House of House was sort of still a lot of that custom work. And when the more that I grew as a business, it became more about the idea of what we were doing as opposed to just about my own art and my own, like, do you like Sarah or not? It's kind of what I wanted to get away from. But then there was like this common thread throughout all of the work that I was doing, which was the strawberry and O'Damon, right, is the heart berry. And there was this common thread, not only in the artwork, but also in the kind of work that I want to be doing and the kind of work, whether that's in the community or with running or whatever it is, that like the idea of the heart and that heart work was really what I wanted. So that's how I ended up rebranding as Hartberry. So I had to learn how to do that. I had to learn how to rebrand.
You know, what are some of those steps as far as rebranding?
Well, it is really scary because I think like I didn't grow up knowing how to run a business. I don't have a business degree or, you know, any of those kind of things. So this is all stuff I learned in real time as I'm going. And so there's all kinds of things about like you own domains and you have your tax ID numbers and you have to change that stuff over. But the cool thing about the, there's lots of really great resources and people who can help you with this stuff. Like the small business development people are really great. And so I think I finally reached out and like found people who could help me learn how to do it. But something that I learned in this process that I thought was really, relevant and interesting, and I think especially for native entrepreneurs, is that it's really important for people to be able to spell and easily find your business. So when I would say I'm House of Howes, people would go, and how do you spell that? And I think that that's really problematic with search engine stuff and with people using Google. People need to be able to just like find you. So now I can say Heartberry and they go, oh, Heartberry, no problem. And it still has all that story and that Ojibwe context. Like, I feel like I'm still being true to myself and my like vision. And there's a whole bunch behind that idea of Heartberry, but it's still very easy for people to find. It's really relatable. So I learned a lot in that process of branding and rebranding about what makes business work. Cause I didn't know, you know? And so I think, definitely make your business easy to spell is my advice. Because I think we want to use Ojibwe words. I think a lot of us really want to do that. And we want to have that context in there. And I thought about that. And I thought, how can I fuse that? How can I have there be this Ojibwe context, but it still be easy? And I was like, okay, Heartberry. There, boom, there you go. So, yeah.
So with your, with some of your changes from House of Howes to Heartberry, where has your journey as a tribal entrepreneur taken you? I know you've had the opportunity to get some national exposure for some of your work, and we can get into the Quaypac stuff later, but I've heard you've had some interesting meeting encounter with some famous people.
Who did I meet that was famous?
Oh my God, you can't say that because when Oprah listens to this podcast, she's going to be so disappointed that you're...
I think that the Oprah thing is still really out of body for me. So people will bring it up to me and I'll be like, oh my gosh, that's true. That did happen. It's just like so mind-blowing. Yeah. So what was crazy? So I got this phone call. It was like October of like 2019. This woman said, I work for Oprah's team. We're coming on this tour and we would like to talk to you about coming and meeting with you. And I'm like, first of all, you're probably fake and you're a stalker. Why are you calling me? She gave me all this information. I had to look her up. They interviewed me. They were super thorough. We had to do background checks. It was all super top secret. And, and I really pushed them, I said, I don't want you to come and meet me. I want you to meet all these women that I run with. Like, I want you to come and be a part of this community that I'm a part of. And I kept pushing them, like, this is what you need to come and see us. Like, this is what, not me, but us. And they do this whole top secret thing, you know, Oprah loves to surprise people. So I knew she was coming, but they told me if anybody finds out about this, we'll pull the plug. Like, they were really strict. Yeah. And so I'm just like freaking out inside. So I told everybody in the group, we're going to Oprah's event. Like, they're giving us free tickets. Like, this is so cool. And everybody was so excited and just so like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that they're doing this. And they're like, I was like, oh, and then they want to take these pictures of us on this bridge running. So we got to like show up. And I was like psycho the whole day. Like, you cannot be late. You cannot, you have to wear these clothes. You have to. Crazy. And everybody was like, Sarah, you are on like a crazy level right now. And So we're there, we're taking all these pictures, and all of a sudden this like fancy SUV rolls up, and I'm new. And they do this thing where they're like, oh, look over here. So you're like taking pictures, looking. And then she comes around, Oprah like comes around the side of it. And everybody just like completely, you probably seen the videos, like everybody just completely lost their mind. And then I didn't know, should we touch her? Can we hug her? Like, does Oprah want to be touched? I don't know if she, and like we smudge with her, and she was all about smudging. She was like, smudge, let's do it more. She was like, more, more. And we went and walked with her across the St. Anthony Bridge in Minneapolis. And I was like, okay, be cool, be cool. Like, what do you want to talk to Oprah about? You have about 5 minutes. Like, what would you want to share with Oprah Winfrey? And so I was just trying to be genuine. And I was just talking. It's like, she held my arm like this, like an auntie, you know, like how they like grab your arm so they're stable. I was like, I'm holding Oprah Winfrey's arm. Like, hey, Oprah. And she was just like, what do you think she'd be like? Like, she wasn't gushy. She was very strong, very like ethereal, very like, I'm here on a mission. I know what I want to do. And I just talked to her about what it's like in our tribal communities and the issues that we're facing and some of the amazing things that are happening. And then we got to the end and they wanted me to bring one of my wool blankets to wrap her in. But she was talking to a news reporter at the end and the producer kept going like prompting me with her hands, like, do it, do it. And I was like, she's talking. And they're like, do it. And I was like, I'm not going to interrupt her. You don't interrupt your auntie while they're talking. So, and I like wrapped her in this blanket. And I just told her, I said, you know, we like to give blankets to people and give gifts to people who have given to us. And Oprah is this huge, like, iconic figure, right? Who give, like, as far as wellness and health and honestly being the only brown woman on television when we were growing up, right? Like, and she took the blanket and got in her SUV and then we went to her event and she talked about us over and over again. I mean, it was nuts. They brought in all these girls from the res through like a VIP door and like walked us in. It was just like crazy. So that was definitely the most famous person I've ever met. But what she said, and I think that this was really the thing, was she's like, they were doing this work. They didn't do this work for Oprah. Like we do all this because we know we need to, because we know our community needs it. We know we need it. We know our kids need it, right? Like with running and like, you know this, right? You know what I mean? Like healing run. We just do that because that's what we do. My dog is making noise. But it's that like, we do this work because we need to and not to get recognition, but we do it because we think it's important. And that's how we end up there. That was just like wild. Like who the heck would ever thought? A bunch of girls in the res. Here we are.
Running with Oprah.
Oh my God.
Has there been any residuals at all? I mean, have you seen an uptick on your sales or any additional? Has she ordered anything from you?
I really feel like we should be in Oprah's favorite things, right? But I'm thinking about like my blanket is somewhere in Oprah's life.
Yeah.
Like living. And I think that's the cool thing about being an artist is that I love to see my art like working and walking and moving around. You know, when you're a moxie maker, that's what you like to see. Is it like living? And so I think, oh my gosh, my blanket is somewhere like living in Oprah's life. Like maybe it's in Hawaii at her estate and it's like on the couch.
I heard that she has a house up here, like up in around the Hayward Lakes area. There's always been like this long standing rumor that there's a mansion over on this, you know, this undisclosed lake where Oprah lives.
Maybe, it might be there.
Maybe it's there. Who knows?
Yeah. It was incredible. And it just was like the whole, these incredible things that you never ever think are going to happen. Like, and the kind of dreams that I think that you never even let yourself imagine. Like if someone was to be like, we didn't look for that. We didn't seek that out. It was just like, we did the work and they found us. Just like incredible. But I think there's all those kind of things that I've never in a million years have sought that out. So here we are.
So you mentioned, you know, you talk about, well, one of the things that inspires you is, you know, is seeing that your work is living, or, you know, you see it out there and, you know, it's part of people's lives. You know, if you have a philosophy, you know, as far as any business philosophy or any way that you, what you think, I mean, is there a certain philosophical way that you look, that you kind of, that shapes your work in the way that you do business?
Yeah, a couple of things. One is, so like with our florals in particular, what I was told is that they were meant to remind us of foods and medicines that are, so they're meant to remind us of those. And so I try to use my designs to remind myself and to remind other people of whatever. So whatever that is. So I always try to like put a lot of wild rice into my art because I think I want to remind us of this really pivotal and incredible part of our ecosystem, right? So I try to really use our art that's just beautiful on the surface and everyone can look at it and say, that's really pretty. But also to bring that story into it and to make that connection between all the other things that are happening. So there's all this other work that's happening right across Ojibwe country, as far as language revitalization and reseeding of wild rice beds and protecting water and all this other stuff is happening, and bringing that into the art so it can be surfaced, but it can also be a way to tell a story. Because if you look at those old like bandolier bags, old quill work, that stuff is all plants. Like those are real things. And one of my mentors, Wendy Savage, is like, that they put that there because they wouldn't let us talk about our medicine. So they put those plants there to remember what it looked like. And I was like, oh my gosh, it like gives me goosebumps, you know, thinking of like looking at these bandolier bags from 1870 and some grandma was like, this is what this plant looks like. I want you to remember this. And so that's what I try to carry that forward of like, I want you to remember how important this wild rice is. I want you to remember how important these muskrat little paws, how important they are. I want you to remember that. And I have to remind myself to remember all that stuff too, because I can get as much wrapped up in this world as anybody else. So on an art level, but also on a business level, I try to really do my business in a way where everything sort of supports each other. So if I can learn how to use a computer program that's gonna make it easier for me to teach people how to make moccasins, that's like this incredible confluence gift, that if I can use all these things to support each other, then that to me is a great role to play. And so I don't have to be, I can, you know, make a digital pattern. I can create a tutorial and then show somebody in like, who's in Ojibwe, who's living in Holland or something, this is how you make our moccasins, and then they can use that to do that. I think that's a really important part of what I think is my job in this life. So
as a strong example of an Ojibwe woman who is a entrepreneur, I heard you say, I heard you, not necessarily hear you, but I read some of your stuff too, that you've kind of keyed this term, and maybe it's not you, but I've seen you use this term like indigipreneurship. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you coined yourself, or is that just something that kind of in your group? So if you're, is that something that you thought of yourself?
I don't think that I thought of that, and probably there's no original ideas. You know what I mean? Everybody's just reusing. But I think when House of Howls, I was trying to come up with that name, Indigenous was one of these ideas that I had for, I was trying to use as my business name. And that just that idea of always what we do coming from our own place. And so that, I think that we think of business sometime and we think it has to be this colonial, very white way of doing things, when we can do business from our own cultural value system, and we can decide where we want to go with this or that. We don't have to follow a strict set of, and my path as a business person has not been like the MBA like system of doing business. And there's my dog just trying to bust in here. This is no getting away from the dog. But so the idea of I think indigipreneurship is something that there's several companies and people that are doing that. I think Louis Gong is really a leader in that way of doing business, in a way that working with him, I could see that in the non-native world of doing business, you're competing. So I need to do better than you all the time. And I think where we have tension as Native people is we want everyone to move forward together, right? Like, we got to bring everybody with us to go forward. And so I think what working with Louis, what he saw early was the better that we all did, the better he was going to do. The better, and he knew that we would all do better when we all did better. And that's a Paul Wellstone, by the way. But that saying is Paul Wellstone. But I think that concept of indigipreneurship is the idea that I don't want to go forward alone. I want us all to move forward. And that I don't have to compete against any other artist, any other business people, that like we can all build and move forward. And I think that value system is something I think that is what sets us apart and actually makes us special and different. And even like our customers, they want to, the people who buy from me, they want to support that. You know, they're into that. And last year, was it last? Yeah, it was in COVID. I had a collaboration with Duluth Pack, which you probably saw that whole thing go down. And then Duluth Pack invited Ivanka Trump to their store. I was like, what are you doing? I was like, I can't be associated with this. And I had all these bags, just thousands of dollars in inventory of these bags. And so I was like, I'm just pulling these. And I'm pulling them. And I pulled them all off. I donated them all to Lifehouse, which is like a young people's like outreach, like kind of like street outreach place. What was interesting, what happened after pulling that, was we had more surge of sales and support after pulling those than I've ever had. Like, I had a week unlike I've ever had after that, because I think people want to genuinely support that value system. Like, they're like, yes, we want you to do business in line with who you are as a person. So I was scared to do that, but it worked out. And yeah, it was interesting and really scary, but so that was my long answer. Hopefully you edit this later. You can take out the part about my dog walking around.
I think that's probably, well, just like how you were saying about being genuine in the way that you approach business. I think it's important that a podcast stays genuine too. So if you have, you know, mom getting after the kids for playing with the dog because she's trying to have an interview, hey, it's all part of, you know, it, who knows, this might be the, you know, the most listened to podcast episode yet. But anyway, I wanted to just kind of, as we close up, kind of like this, your Heartberry, you know, your kind of your entrepreneurship side of this podcast, what would be some advice you would kind of share with aspiring Native people that are kind of looking to get out, kind of have all this creativity, all this sense of innovation that they want to do, but maybe not necessarily know what to do with it or where to go? What would be some of your advice for them?
Oh my gosh. You know, I've learned so much and I constantly am learning all the time. So I think being willing to constantly learn constantly adapt, constantly shift. And I think we're really good at that as Anishinaabe, right? That's just our, that's a really great skill set that we have, is the ability to adapt. And so I think that's a really important part of that, is like, let yourself learn while you're doing it. And really be authentic, bring your whole self to the table. You don't gotta walk in these two separate worlds, just be your whole self. I think that that's really important. I think if you can find mentors, it's going to transform everything. And even if those mentors like make you cry sometimes, like that's okay. Find people who can support you, surround yourself with people who can shine light for you, because I think that's really important. And then like, let yourself dream really big, like ridiculous, like super out there. Because I don't think I did that right on. I think it took a long time for me to say, oh, maybe this is really going here. But, you know, I started Heartberry with my $800 Cobell check, which was a big deal at that time. I said, if I'm going to get this check, I want it to mean something. What am I going to do with this? And I just rolled that money over and over and over and over again. So I didn't get to take that $800 and then go like, go to the mall and buy some shoes. I had to just keep rolling that and rolling that and rolling that and rolling that. So you have to reinvest in yourself. You have to constantly learn all the time, whether that's YouTube tutorials, like whatever it is, always be learning. Learn how to do new things. Because I think what's tricky and weird, and this has really transformed my business, is that I can do what usually we would pay a middle person to do. So a lot of times, a lot of tribes, organizations, they want custom work done. Usually we're paying a non-native graphic designer to do that work. So if you can find for yourself what you love and build a skill set around yourself that's unique, people are going to like just gravitate towards you for that. So I think that that's a really important part and has really changed things for me. But I think really just being willing to learn and willing to watch a lot of YouTube tutorials. And don't be scared to try something that you're like, I don't know, sure, I could try that. Whew. And I mean, a lot of business people would say you should have a plan. You should have a, I don't usually, but that doesn't mean that that's, I'm sure that's not the right way. but I'm sure it's a trauma response not to plan. So probably planning is a good thing. Yeah.
So as we transition over to, you mentioned earlier that you're part of this wellness group. If you could kind of just explain, you know, I understand what Quaypack is, but maybe kind of, you know, talk about how that all started. Maybe explain the name too for our listeners out there so that they can understand that too.
So Quay is woman in Ojibwe, and Quaypack is obviously a pack of women. But what really started as, so in 2005, we had a daughter who passed away. And at that time, I had always been like significantly overweight and really unhealthy. But I think that after she passed away, I really was like obviously in a really dark place. And I wanted to just start getting out and like moving myself, and just, I wanted to like lose what I call my grief weight. So I just wanted to just get back to where I was physically before that. I had had another son since then. I had this little baby who was starting to run around, and I wanted to be a healthy person for him. And so I started just kind of walking, walk shuffling. I didn't know native runners or know people that did that. It was just so unusual, so strange to me. And so I remember going to my first 5K. My son was like about 1 year old, and it was a like a reservation, like diabetes prevention, you know, like those kind of community 5Ks. And you know, you got everybody from the treatment centers there, you know, it's like a whole bunch of kids who are cheating. And then there's like a couple of non-native people who are actually gonna do the 5K. Like they're like running, you know? Well, I walk up and there's this other woman standing there, it's Chally Topping. And I knew her as a young woman, but I didn't really know her very much. And she was wearing like real like running clothes and stuff. And I was like, whoa, there's like a real Native woman who's a runner. And she was said to me, she said, you should come do grandma's half with me. And I was like, why would I do that? And in what universe? So I went and did this 5K. It took me like 45 minutes. It was horrible. I was the last person that finished, but I remember running to the finish line and my son was sitting there in his stroller with my husband and he was clapping his little hands. And I was like, that's what I want for my life. And I think like you and I have talked about this, but like, I think the weird gift of that, of the grief and loss was that I wanted her life to mean something. I wanted my life to mean something. I wanted something that from that loss to fill. And so it was like, how do I build my life back? And I think that running became this way to like run towards my life. And running with the Quebec was this way of building life around myself and really brought me back to life. And I really think of like the legacy of losing our daughter has helped me to build the Quaypack, to build my business. Like all those things that happen really are like strange, like results of that, or like this way that everything became fuller. And so it's so weird, but like all this time later, so it's been 15 years now. And it's like, I can see all the things that have came out of that. And one of them is the Quaypack. And so I started connecting with Chally, running with her. And we started seeing like, oh, we're out here like in the woods. Like we feel so great, these Native women. And we're like, we can talk freely about all kinds of messed up stuff that we don't want to talk about in front of like non-Native people. And we'd never seen a Native group before of runners. And it just felt magical and perfect and wonderful. And most of us had never run races. And now most of us have done everything from 5Ks to 50Ks, 50 mile races. And, but perhaps most importantly, have really changed the narrative, I think, about what do Native people do? What do Native women do? How do our kids think about what we do? And who do they think we are? And I think that it is no longer unusual to see Native runners here. I think it's pretty normal now. And I don't think anybody's like, oh, are they running from the cops? Like, what are those people doing? So I feel like that's been this incredible gift and this like way that I've been able to take that hardship and turn it into something beautiful. And that's the thing, right, about like losing a kid is that you don't get to have anything beyond it. And so when you're able to create things beyond it, it makes them still there. And so I think that's been, and I'm talking to you about this because I maybe wouldn't even get into what I said. We're like, we're not going to cry today. But I really think that like that always, for me has been like the lesson of this is like, all I can control is my response. All I can control is what I do. And I'm just going to keep choosing life over and over again. I'm going to just keep choosing that path of life over and over. And I think running has been that for me. And I think for the women in the group too, everybody in the group would say, oh, so much more than a running group, like so much more than that. So it's changed my life for sure. Like, no question. Unbelievable.
You know, and I used to think, well, heart attacks and strokes and those things happen to older people. You know, I'm still a young guy. I can still, you know, have a piece of cake or drink some soda. But then I'm sitting there thinking, I don't know, man. It's like, I think I got to kind of get refocused here and kind of take advantage of whatever athleticism I have left. And I was talking to my son the other day. He said, you know what, Dad, one of my dreams is to play basketball with you with you in a skinnier body. I was like, well, I just told him, I said, well, miigwech for framing it that way. You know, you could have said something else, you know, probably a little bit more brutally honest, but and so that was kind of like what I was thinking about, you know. And so as I kind of, as we kind of wrap things up here, I think it's all, you know, your story of like how you got started as far as pursuing those things that inspire you, whether it's your art and your passion for uplifting or taking care of your family, but uplifting your community, bringing your community with you, but also about addressing those things in your life that have also, you know, impacted you, whether it's learning how to deal with your grief or continuing to deal with that, however, you know, you, however it is that you process that. I think it's all important. So, I, you know, I just want to just say that I appreciate, you know, your story. And so as we close up here today, we mentioned a little bit about your, the philosophy, but if you have any words of wisdom for listeners out there.
It's so funny because, you know, when you mentioned about being like young, like we think we're still really young and like we're not. So we're like, oh, we're those people, you know, like we're starting to be those people that people will look to for like advice and information. So like, I don't feel wise at all. But I feel like I've learned a lot, and I, so I guess that's my biggest advice to people is to seek out mentorship, seek out people to help you, seek out people to be accountable to, reconnect. It's so crazy because I think we are so afraid to try to reconnect because we think we're going to be rejected. And that's just really not been my experience, like at all. The biggest roadblock to me being reconnected is me doing it. Like that is me, is my fear, a fear of rejection, fear of whatever. So like if whatever it is you're seeking, and most of the time, if you seek it out, someone's going to be like, oh, you want to know about this, 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 or you want to be a part of this, 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 that like those things are going to change your entire core when you actually seek them out. So whatever it is, whether that's your ceremony life, your health, your dreams of your career, whatever it is, like most likely you seek that out, it's gonna be there. And the biggest part is just getting over yourself. And that's speaking from my own experience of being afraid to seek things out. So yeah, I guess that's my advice. And just find the things that bring you joy. Find the things that you just lose yourself in, and you just feel like life is swirling around you, because that's probably the right thing to do, is whatever that thing is. So, but thank you for asking me to be a part of this and to talk to you today. And just so weird coming back into the world, you know, as like the COVID world opens up and as people are getting vaccinated, and feels like this morph of time and this weird thing that we all like lived through apart. It's interesting to kind of come back and connect with people after all this. So thank you for asking me to.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Miigwech to Sarah Agaton House for joining today's podcast. To learn more about Heartberry and to view blog articles and to shop online, go to heartberry.com. For information about 8th Generation, go to 8thgeneration.com. Go to northlandsbdc.org and entrepreneurfund.org to view and utilize resources for entrepreneurial support and growth opportunities. To view a video on the Quay Pack and learn more about their journey and impact, go to the YouTube video, How These Native American Women Found the Strength to Heal Through Running. To learn more about leadership and civic engagement, go to extension.umn.edu/community-development/leadership-and-civic-engagement, where you will find more resources on growing leaders and strengthening leadership. Make sure to follow the Minnesota Indigenous Leadership Network on Facebook at www.facebook.com/UMN www.indigenous.leadership.network to stay up to date on research and resources for tribal communities and tribal leadership. We hope that you will join us again for another episode of Indigenized Connections on Air.